The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, I thought I would talk some more about the importance of failing. Hopefully some of you have had a chance to fail properly this morning. I think some people are so focused on success that it becomes a hindrance for them in their spiritual practice. They're measuring themselves. Have I succeeded? Have I gotten as far as I'm supposed to get? Or they have some abstract idea that there is something called success, and if they are successful, then they're a good person, they're an approved person, they're a certifiably approved person. Especially if you succeed in your religion of choice. And, you know, that's what people want, is to be certifiably approved. We should pass out certificates. You are certifiably approved in Buddhism. A person in good standing. And so some people feel like they need to do something in order to kind of succeed in some way or reach a certain level of practice or something. So the advantages of failure or learning to be relaxed around failure is essential if you're going to do meditation practice or mindfulness practice. Now, one of the great American sports is baseball, and a really good baseball player, I mean, exceptionally good. I mean, like, you might end up in the in Cooperstown at the Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame, if you only fail 2/3 of the time. And because the batting average is right. If you have 3.33 batting average, I mean, that's like really hot. If you do that for several years in a row, but that means you fail 2/3 of the time when you're up at bat. You know, a mediocre baseball player might fail 4/5 of the time. If we did batting averages for meditators, you know, how many meditation sessions were you successful? I think that it'd be a very, very rare person whose batting average would be higher than 0.000. if success is measured by, the point is to be in the present moment, and I will not leave the present moment once during that sitting, then we'd have a success, you know, be, you know, 0.000 for just about everybody. And but, you know, it's kind of absurd, the idea that you're supposed to be completely present, you know, for 45 minutes or whatever long you sit. You know, and so most people don't hold themselves against that standard, but maybe they, sometimes unconsciously or subliminally, they kind of, you know, any kind of failure. I mean, I've sat down to meditate and felt bad about myself after 30 seconds. You know, well, I guess that meditation is shot because my mind wandered off a little bit, or because I feel a little bit scattered or distracted, so you know, what's to be learned from a good, you know, having a good failure? A lot of things to be learned there. One is to learn what our attitude is towards success and failure. What we have at stake, how much we're depending on some idea of success, some idea of attaining something, getting something. Because some people think that they'll only be an approved person if they get something, attain something. I've certainly had people who have come, told me that they're trying to have a good meditation and retreat so they can, they don't say it this way, but so they can show off when they come for interview. So they can, they're trying to figure out, what is it I want as a teacher? And so they're trying to kind of, you know, have the right experience so that they can somehow get approved or get validated or something, or do it right in my eyes too. So to see that, see, when we have a sense of when we failed at something, what are the attitudes that come into play around that sense of failure? And what are the assumptions behind wanting to be successful? It's a very important part of life, I think. And to spend some really good time looking at this. Most people grow up and develop certain attitudes towards success and failure. And people get a lot of people get elated or depressed. They feel high or low depending on success and failure. One of the forms of equanimity in Buddhism, a way of being at peace, is not have your heart dependent on success and failure, your sense of well-being, your sense of being at peace or at ease. And so everyone has success and failure all the time in many ways. So what's your attitude towards this? The bigger the challenge of what you set yourself up to do, the bigger the goal, more difficult the goal, the more likely you can have a whole series of failures along the way or setbacks along the way. And so you tend to get easily discouraged. You tend to have you know, there's a tie into a belief system that you have that, yes, it just shows, I can't do anything. I can't succeed. And this just proves one more time. And sometimes the attitudes around failure are self-defeating, or say it differently, are self-fulfilling. And so, you know, if we believe some of the belief systems, then that, you know, about failure, then you will fail because it just pulls you down or it's self-fulfilling. So to look at the attitude, so one of the great opportunities when you have failed is to look at what's behind that idea of failure. What are your assumptions, belief systems connected to it? And part of that also is what is the identity you have connected to that belief system of failing and success? Does your sense of identity, sense of who you need to be, how you want to represent yourself to others and to yourself, how you need to be represented in the family, the world system your family of origin kind of provided you growing up, or your Buddhist family seems to provide you, you know, what's the identity that you're trying to play out? And so how does that tie in to your idea of success and failure? I failed miserably sometimes in my Buddhist practice, and it was only when I failed terribly, just utter failure, that I finally was able to see how tremendously attached I was to self-identity issues. I saw it very dramatically. One of my first sesshins at Zen Center, these seven-day retreats. And I was a relatively new student. I think it was maybe my second or third sesshin, seven-day retreat. It was at Green Gulch. And they had this custom back then of the last sitting of the evening would be open-ended. They wouldn't end it on time. They'd only end it when the abbot came into the room and he would recite a poem or something, some wonderful Zen little thing. And then we would also be given this hot drink, this beautiful barley molasses drink that was supposed to sustain us so we could voluntarily stay up late through the night and meditate beyond the last sitting. And there was one time when I think the abbot was giving a very long private interview to one of the students, this interview, and I went on and on, I guess, and so he came really late. So what it meant was that last sitting was not just 40 minutes long, which was supposed to be. It was like, after 50 minutes he wasn't there, after 60 minutes he still wasn't there, 70 minutes he still wasn't there. And so we were just, you're not supposed to move in Zen until the bell rings. The difference between Zen and Vipassana, I've been told, is that in Zen, if no one rings the bell, no one moves. In Vipassana, if no one rings the bell, someone gets up and hits it. So I was just sitting there in a tremendous amount of physical pain. And I was sitting right in front of the door into the meditation hall. So anybody who came into the hall would come through a door and basically run into me sitting right there. And so I was just miserable in the pain. I was sitting there. And then finally, it was just too much for me, poor little Gil. and I collapsed. Just, you know, most un-Zen, like, you know, I just completely collapsed, you know, and it was not a pretty sight if you're a Zen student. And just as I collapsed, the door opened up and the abbot walked in. And I was the total Zen failure. I actually went back to my room and sobbed. And only then could I see how much identity, how much I'd invested in being seen and how I wanted to be seen and the idea of success. And there's so much that was going on there that I wasn't aware of. But that was so dramatic, it kind of was in my face in a way that I had to then pay attention to it and learn from that. Having a good failure is sometimes the best thing that can happen to people. So I can fail better? Yeah, I was too successful at Zen, so I had to find something I'd fail at better. And I failed equally in both. And one of the things I learned at Tassajara about failing was actually from working in the kitchen there for a year. Kitchens are very forgiving because you can fail at making a meal. You can burn the food or put too much salt in or just make a lousy meal. And the meal gets served, it gets eaten, thrown away, whatever. And then the next day, you can start all over again. And so I just loved it that, you know, no matter what happened the day before, I would show up the next day in the kitchen and I'd say, great, I get to try again. And this idea of just letting go and saying, I get to try again, rather than being dragged down by yesterday's failures, how to learn from it. So that's one of the ways to use failures, to say, is to, rather than being dragged down by it, say, okay, what can I learn from this? And how can I do better in the future? Is much more inspiring, I think. So one of the core things about failure, to learn the lessons from it, is to learn, what do I need to let go of? What was I holding on to in that I'm miserable, that I'm upset, I feel bad, pulled down by this sense of failure? And perhaps what's more important than success in some small way in meditation is the letting go of attachments we've had. So I've known people, and it's happened to me too, that I haven't been sometimes successful at getting concentrated. So I'm a concentration failure. But in trying to get concentrated and seeing that I failed, I was successful in letting go a lot of the beliefs, attachments, self-identity issues that I had around getting concentrated. And I actually ended up being much more peaceful because I learned to let go of those. I mean, it's not easy and quick, but by letting go of it. The more relaxed you are at failing, the easier it is to be successful in meditation. The more you kind of realize that there are all kinds of ways you're not going to be successful, and the mind's going to wander off, you'll be reactive, all these things. And the more you see it as part of the ecosystem, part of what arises and passes, and hold it more and more lightly, and be at ease with the so-called failures. And don't let it get in the way. Don't let it be the judgments, the belief systems, the meanings, the meaning assigning that we have to it. Don't assign meaning to it. Just accept that let's try to do better in the future. And hold it lightly and easier. Not only will the practice unfold better with that attitude, but that's really the part of the whole function of the Buddhist practice to begin with. It's not to get concentrated, not necessarily get more mindful, but to hold our life more easily, not to cling or grasp to it. And sometimes failing is a really great teacher in learning to let go and hold things easier and easier and become freer and freer. So look, be very careful with any of the ways in which you look at your life through the framework of success and failure. Because there might be a lot of unexamined assumptions behind those judgments, success and failure. you know, even the very notion of success and failure is so black and white, it's not really that useful if you hold it in a very black and white, you know, all or nothing kind of approach. If it's all or nothing when you sit down to meditate, either I'm going to be completely present the whole 45 minutes or not, then your batting average will be 0.000. But if your idea of success is that whenever I can remember, I'm going to come back to the present moment, then you're more likely having a feeling that you've succeeded than if you set up yourself up to, I'm going to be mindful the whole time. Whenever I remember, I'll do my best with this. And last thing I'll say is I've known a lot of practitioners over the years now, and some have it relatively easy in their practice. Some people have tremendous challenges and difficulties in their practice. The people who I tend to be most inspired by, the people who struggle, have a lot of difficulty, who, you know, in conventional ways maybe fail. The persistence, the strength of character, the willingness to come back, and the way that they get mellowed and matured through all their difficulties is quite profound. So if you're the failing type, take heart, it's okay. And if you're not the failing type, then don't try to fail for my sake now. Because I said that I'm inspired by the people who fail. Anyway, have fun. So we have a few minutes now for our temple cleaning. And who here knows a little bit about the book packing?